Down with Bob Kincaid. 3 hours of conversation, cussing, and a discussing with America's only born and bred Southern liberal talk host. Head On with Bob Kincaid is brought to you each night by Coal River Mountain Watch. Coal River Mountain Watch invites you to become part of the solution, part of a sustainable future, part of the uprising against mountaintop removal. Coal River Mountain Watch, CRMW.net. And now, from high in the hills of beautiful West Bicod, Virginia, here's Bob Kincaid on the Head On Radio Network.
Well, howdy! A little over a minute past the hour, this is the horn. HeadOnRadioNetwork.com is our home. And this is, of course, the 24th day of February 2015, counting down the last remaining sorry, miserable, freezing, frigid, crappy days of February. You know, someday I would like to go to the Southern Hemisphere and just experience the January and February that did suck. Ah, yes, indeed. It is Titanic Tuesday on the horn. You may recall that Titanic Tuesday is the day that we celebrate the Titanic, sarcastically meaning really, really big, but actually meaning catastrophic intellect of the right wing. Titanic Tuesday gets its name from a story that our buddy Jim told us many years ago now, in which a 962nd-tier right-wing blatherer by the name of Steve over in Beckley fielded a caller from one of his mouth-walking, knuckle-breathing faithful who asked him, "Steve, how come it is they is seashells in rocks in West Virginia?" To which Steve, the genius, replied, "Well, caller, that's because of the movement of the Titanic plates." Yeah, no word yet on the movement of the Titanic trifle dish. But, no, really. Thank you very kindly, Jeremy in Vermont. Loud and clear on TuneIn. I do appreciate the information. Where's Gerald? Gerald's not handy. Damn. Shut it, Sparky. Come out here, Bob Kincaid. It is beautiful today. I have no doubt that it is. It is not beautiful here. What had been a really sloppy, wet snow has frozen over and become just hard, miserable ice. And hey, we may get some more tonight. Cool. Not. So that's where we find ourselves this lovely evening. And, of course, the horn is a listener-supported undertaking. It relies upon you to help keep it going. Bearing many, many thanks to Reinhard, who provided a have a show on me last night. Thank you very kindly. And I had a thank you very kindly to Felicia for asking the question by email last night. Email bobkincaid@gmail.com. How we do that? Our buddy Ed Kofer invented the have a show on me concept. And basically, since we try to raise $150 every evening, have a show on me is one person shouldering a load and just saying, "Hey, I'm taking care of the show tonight." And that allows us possibly sometimes to actually get a little bit out front. So that's how the have a show on me concept works. If you want to do it, just run over to the interface at headonradionetwork.com, the PayPal interface under the tab Contribute. And follow it from there. And remember, all that really, really nosy information, like who you work for and crap like that, you don't have to enter that. You just have to enter enough basic information to get you to the second field, which takes you to either the credit card processing thing or PayPal. It's that easy. Yeah, okay, you can shut it too, Cali Liberal. Gosh, it's been freezing today. I don't know how I can handle these 50-degree nights. Thank you. Thank you, News Ninja Carol Baker, picking up Gerald Slack. Shut it, Callie. Oh, goodness. Yeah, we got down zero or a little lower last night. Whee! But this is Titanic Tuesday. And we finished, you may recall, uh-oh, News Ninja Carol Baker is now issuing threats. I will find you, all of you. Mm-hmm. You may recall we finished the program last night with a wonderful conversation. My dear friend Ed Rabel, Emmy Award-winning broadcast journalist, called in to discuss the O'Reilly factor, if we define the O'Reilly factor as a propensity for lying without a smidgen of conscience. Yeah. And we had just a tremendous conversation. I have so much respect for Ed. Ed walks the walk and talks the talk. His is a life well lived. And he's a hillbilly, which is cool. Hell, I think there's even a place called Rabel Mountain somewhere down in Lincoln County. Anyway, so that's, and we were talking about it because it's a classic case of right-wing hypocrisy, or otherwise defined as I-O-K-I-Y-A-R. It's okay if you're a Republican. Insofar as, instead of disciplining Bill O'Reilly for being an obvious untruth teller, a probably pathological liar if you get right down to it. Sue me, Bill. Fuck you. And by the way, he's been, because he's so good with the women folks, he's been threatening female writers. If you write anything I don't like, I'll come after you with everything I've got. Yeah, that's right. Falafel in both hands. Mm-hmm. Oh, nice. News Ninja Carol Baker pointing out today, Billow has been busted for his lies regarding the Kennedy story. Pretty sure Billow shot Brian Williams' chopper and J.R. Ewing and Cock Robin. Yeah, and if you look very carefully, you'll find him there on the roof with the Beatles in the Let It Be concert. Jesus. Well, again, Bill O'Reilly goes untouched. Brian Williams remains the only person to be punished for not being factual about the Iraq War. I mean, did the Pentagon officials who lied about Jessica Lynch ever get? No, I don't think so. As she stood with her six guns ablazing, holding off the demented, demonic, cannibalistic Iraqis who actually found her and saved her life. No. So, we have a new installment. Keith Olbermann. Yeah, that's a good question, Carol. Carol wants to know whether was he on the Superdome with the American Sniper. Oh, Jesus. Yeah. So, Keith Olbermann, who has a program that I'm sure none of us watch because we're all ever so far above being being entertained by something as plebeian as sports, Keith has a program on ESPN. Keith also tweets, and he does not suffer fools gladly. So, according to CNN Money, in a report today, well, Keith is in the doghouse again. Because, see, back when it turned out that icon Joe Paterno was turning a blind eye while one of his defensive coaches was raping a lot of little boys, lots and lots, well, that incurred Keith Olbermann's wrath because it really was pretty damn disgusting. And he has been after Penn State off and on ever since then. To my way of thinking, justifiably so. So a story comes out that Penn State, students at Penn State, I presume, have raised some $13 million for pediatric cancer research and a pediatric cancer foundation. Well, if you're a liberal, if you're a progressive, if you're a liberal like Keith Olbermann, it is intolerable for you to say anything that hurts anybody's little feelings. Because somebody tweeted a link at him about this Pediatric Cancer Foundation fundraising, and then used the tired old Penn State cheer, because if you ever go to a football game, they sit in the stadium, one side of the stadium yells, "We are," and the other side of the stadium yells, "Penn State, we are Penn State." It gets really obnoxious really fast. And so she tweeted it, Lisa Aiello de Leon, I don't know. Down in Atlanta way, there's a Ponce de Leon Avenue, Street, Boulevard, whatever. But it's pronounced Ponce de Leon. I kid you not. So I don't know how this young woman pronounces her name, but she tweets at Keith Olbermann because she's deliberately needling him, "We are," and then a link to the fundraiser. And Keith Olbermann just gets on his Twitter and responds, "Pitiful." And in the overall scheme of things, that's okay. Because really, the fact that Penn State University still has a football program after that football program was basically just a clearinghouse pimp organization for little boys to be raped by Jerry Sandusky, that is pitiful. Well, it did not sit well with the suits at Penn State University. And they kept needling at him. And he kept responding. One Penn State fan said, "So you have no opinion on Penn State raising over $13 million for pediatric cancer research?" And he replied, "Good for you. Doesn't change the school's reputation. Check back next century." And then it was off and running, and there was a Twitter flame war a-raging. Guess what happened? The suits at ESPN decided that Keith needed a timeout. No, really. That's what happens to you if you're a progressive or you're a liberal or whatever we call ourselves, and you're working this side of the street. And you say something that somebody doesn't like. By God, there's consequences for that. There's consequences for calling Penn State University pitiful. Consequences! So Keith Olbermann has been pulled off the air at ESPN and given a 4-day timeout. He will be back behind the desk come Monday. Then, they also forced him, they being ESPN, to issue an apology. Now, let's compare this, say, with Christy Capel's apology for using the word jigaboo Monday up in Cleveland on the Fox affiliate. What is it, Fox 8? "I apologize if any of you were offended." No. This is how you do it stand-up-ish. This is a stand-up apology. "I apologize for the PSU tweets. I was stupid and childish and way less mature than the students there who did such a great fundraising job. That is how one pens a sincere apology, or tweets a sincere apology. Though why it was necessary is still beyond me. I mean, really, it's beyond me. I'm stumped. He can't have an opinion as to Penn State University's reputation? Because I'm with Keith on this. Penn State University's reputation is still pretty much in the toilet. Because really, there hasn't been a complete and full accounting of exactly how that culture developed. And there, and really, where's the punishment? Joe Paterno's dead. Sandusky, eh. Prison. Institutionally, though, eh. Thanks for playing. So I don't think that there could possibly be, if we set it up this way, a better exemplar of the distance and the difference between right-wing broadcasters and progressive broadcasters. I mean, just in the grand scheme of things, which has... Keith Olbermann didn't lie about his opinion of Penn State. And yet he has received more punishment than... falafel man Bill O'Reilly has received or will receive for being an outright fabricator, a mendacious liar about his own experiences. It's stunning, really. And just for the fun of it, let's go back to the suit papers real quick, the Andrea Macris versus Bill O'Reilly and Fox News and Roger Ailes and all those jerks suit papers from some 10-plus years ago. This is paragraph 42 of Andrea Macris' suit. It has to do with a dinner she went to with Falafel Bill. He was trying to think of loofah, by the way. That's how drunk he was when he was coming on to her. He confused loofah with falafel. During the course of this dinner, in approximately May 2003, defendant Bill O'Reilly, without solicitation or invite, regaled plaintiff and her friend with stories concerning the loss of his virginity to a girl in a car at JFK, meaning the airport, to really wild Scandinavian airline stewardesses he had gotten together with, and a girl at a sex show in Thailand who had shown him things in a back room that, quote, blew, bracketed, his mind. I frankly think mind should be bracketed, too. Defendant then stated he was going to Italy to meet the Pope. Make me a nerd. Poor Pope. I wonder if they'll blow his... Never mind. Well, I don't know. Maybe I missed that. Marty said, didn't they let Sandusky out? Ew. Jim pointing out, re-Bill O'Reilly, B-O. Bullshit origin. What a cad, says Jim. Defendant then said he was going to Italy to meet the Pope, that his pregnant wife was staying at home with his daughter, and implied he was looking forward to some extramarital dalliances with the hot Italian women. Both plaintiff and her friend were repulsed, but felt powerless to protest strongly, since defendant was plaintiff's boss and a powerful man at Fox. Defendant finally stopped after noting, Macris can't handle it. Paragraph 54. On or about April 13, 2004, during dinner at Milos, plaintiff Andrea Macris again told defendant Bill O'Reilly that she would return to work on the O'Reilly Factor only if he no longer engaged in inappropriate conduct. Defendant agreed. of course, because then you'd be working for me and I'd have power over you, so that couldn't happen. That wouldn't be fair. When plaintiff reminded defendant that he had done the same thing to other women who worked on the O'Reilly Factor and that he should be careful or they might tell someone, O'Reilly vehemently threatened with words to the effect, okay, thank you, Carol, thank you. Sandusky is appealing, but still in prison. Good. Very good. O'Reilly vehemently threatened with words to the effect, if any woman ever breathed a word, I'll make her pay so dearly that she'll wish she'd never been born. I'll rake her through the mud, bring up things in her life, and make her so miserable that she'll be destroyed. And besides, she wouldn't be able to afford the lawyers I can, or endure it financially as long as I can. And nobody would believe her. It'd be her word against mine. And who are they going to believe? Me or some unstable woman making outrageous accusations? They'd see her as some psycho, someone unstable. Paragraph 55. During the course of this conversation, Defendant Bill O'Reilly further sternly warned to the effect, if you cross Fox News Channel, it's not just me, it's Roger Ailes who will go after you. I'm the street guy out front making loud noises about the issues, but Ailes operates behind the scenes, strategizes and makes things happen so that one day, bam, the person gets what's coming to them that never sees it coming. Look at Al Franken. One day he's going to get a knock on his door, and life as he's known it will change forever. That day will happen. Trust me. That would be Senator Al Franken now. During the course of this guy, he really has a hang-up about Al Franken. Probably needs a visit from the Secret Service. During the course of this conversation, Defendant Bill O'Reilly bizarrely rambled further about Al Franken. Ailes knows very powerful people, and this goes all the way to the top. Plaintiff queried, to the top of what? Defendant responded, top of the country. Just look at who's on the cover of his book. Bush and Cheney, they're watching him, and will be for years. Franken's finished, and he's going to be sorry he ever took Fox News Channel on. Plaintiff found O'Reilly's paranoid rambling both strange and alarming. And then, paragraph 66. During the course of O'Reilly's telephone monologue on August 2, 2004, he suggested that plaintiff Andrea Macris purchase a vibrator and name it, and that he had one, quote, shaped like a cock with a little battery in it. Do you have any idea how hard it is to read this with a straight face? I'm sure he meant rooster, right? That a woman had given him. One wonders why. It became apparent that defendant was masturbating as he spoke. Ew! Time for the eye bleach. After he climaxed, Defendant O'Reilly said to plaintiff, I appreciate the fun phone call. You can have fun tonight. I'll appreciate it. I mean it. Plaintiff felt as if the floor had fallen out from beneath her. She was shocked, frightened, and upset. She felt trapped. And then finally, the coup de grace, as it were, paragraphs 77 and 78 in your hymnal. Despite informing him that she was not at all interested in the conversation, and despite her adamant refusal to participate in such talk, Defendant O'Reilly informed plaintiff Andrea Macris that he was watching a porn movie and babbled perversely regarding his fantasies concerning Caribbean vacations because, purportedly, once people get into that hot weather, they shed their inhibitions, you know, they drink during the day, they lay there and lazy, they have dinner, and then they come back and fool around. That's basically the modus operandi. If you haven't gotten the hockey puck out yet, you might want to. Just saying. Paragraph 78. During the course of his monologue, that's what they called it, Defendant O'Reilly further stated, and see, this is the fun part. I believe, do I remember this correctly? This is all based on transcriptions of actual tape recordings of Bill O'Reilly? Yes. Well, if I took you down there, meaning the Caribbean, I hope. Well, if I took you down there, then I'd want to take a shower with you right away. That'd be the first thing I'd do. Yeah, we'd check into the room and we'd order up some room service, and you'd definitely get two wines into you as quickly as I could get it into you. Yeah, I would get them into you, maybe intravenously, get those glasses of wine into you. You'd basically be in the shower, and then I'd come in and I'd join you, and you'd have your back to me, and I'd take that little loofah thing and kind of soap up your back, rub it all over you, get you to relax, hot water, and you know, you'd feel the tension drain out of you, and you'd still be with your back to me, and then I'd kind of put my arm, it's one of those mitts, those loofah mitts, you know, so I got my hands in it, and I'd put it around front, kind of rub your tummy a little bit with it, and then with my other hand, I'd start to massage your boobs, get your nipples really hard, because I like that, and you have really spectacular boobs. So anyway, I'd be rubbing your big boobs and getting your nipples really hard, kind of kissing your neck from behind, and then I'd take the other hand with the falafel thing, and I'd put it on your pussy, but you'd have to do it really light, just kind of like a tease business. Go and get me a bucket. I'm going to throw up. So that, and so for that, remember, he was not punished. And he's not going to be punished for threatening a writer from the New York Times. And he's not going to be punished for lying about Buenos Aires or JFK or lying about hot Scandinavian flight attendants. I'm sure he still calls them stewardesses. Or maybe lying about that lovely time he had with the Pope. Meanwhile, Keith Olbermann is sitting out the rest of the week on the bench because he said Penn State is pitiful. We all clear on this? See, the only way to be, well, look, Chris Christopherson was right. Freedom's just another word for nothing left to lose. The only way you can be free enough to actually say what's on your mind is to not have anybody writing you a check. Because then they own your ass. Like it or no. And here we are. I was expecting several responses, Jeremy, in Vermont, but not that one. Thanks to Bill frickin' O'Reilly, I'll never look at Ron Jeremy the same again. No, Ron Jeremy has gone up considerably in my moral estimation. But that's the beauty. You call into this program, you can say pretty much anything that's on your mind. As long as you're not some sort of sickening right-winger. They're not allowed on at all. And I, for the most part, can say pretty much anything that's on my mind, and by God, I have from time to time. It's a beautiful, beautiful, madcap media world we live in, isn't it? Kind of goes back to what Ed Rabel was saying last night. He seemed to not have a lot of faith in the idea that there was going to be anything in the way of real journalism such as was done back in the day on the electric TV box when he was doing it, or when his predecessors were doing it, the Cronkites and the Huntleys and the Brinkleys and the Murrows of the world. Yeah, I'm sorry about the billow stuff, but I thought that needed to be reviewed. Just to remind us of the paragon, what a paragon of virtue that sick freak is. No, Michael. Michael says, Bob, I take it we're supposed to realize that O'Reilly's an asshole? I thought that ship had sailed a while ago. That ship has sailed, and it's circumnavigated the globe 4,000 or 5,000 or 6,000 times. No, the point here is to understand the breadth and the depth and the scope of what you can get away with in fact, you are a right winger. As opposed to what you can't if you're on our side. That's all. News Ninja Carol Baker saying, I'm going to start passing out horn barf bags. Please don't ever do that again. I won't. At least until the next time that Billo gets caught prevaricating life. By the way, if you look on my Facebook page, thank you, Kelly. I had a wish fulfilled. You will see the face of Bill O'Reilly transposed onto a third-stage guild navigator from the movie Dune as he prepares to fold space between Buenos Aires and the Falkland Islands. Thank you, Kelly. I got a big old belly laugh out of that. Yes, indeed, Carol Baker pointing out, Bill O'Reilly, Admiral of the Douche Armada, for when your douchiness just won't fit into a douche canoe. Oh, no, he's a douche frigate. He'd like you to believe he's a douche man of war, but he's never been near one. Exactly. We have upset Kate on the front range. This is a waste of time, she says. Audience, waste of time, audience contributions, and Chris didn't write those words. My afternoon. I thought he wrote. Wait a minute. Yeah, Me and Bobby McGee is a song written by Chris Christopherson and Fred Foster, originally performed by Roger Miller. Okay. So I left out Fred Foster, my bad. Kate continues, isn't there anything in the stacks that doesn't reek of spoiled shit? Looking forward to something of substance. Oh, we got substance. We got lots of substance. How's about this for substance? Did you catch the announcement yesterday? Because, you know, there's nothing in the world any more substantial than talking about how the ISIS or ISIS headloppers are out there in the middle of the ocean on their little inflatable seahorse life rings, rowing furiously to get to the land of the free and the home of the brave so they can blow up the mall. Are you scared yet? My pants are sopping wet at the mere thought of it. Now, the government announced yesterday that even though ISIS has said that they really, really, really want to shoot up the Mall of America and other malls on the way, maybe, who knows, and they want it to be just like that mall in Nairobi, Kenya, well, the government says there's no credible threats out there yet. Of course, we have a country that's wall-to-wall firearms. Yeah. And so if somebody does decide that they want to do that, they won't have any trouble getting the firearms with which to do it because, you know, freedom. Al Wolverines! Right? Yeah. Here's where it gets a little dodgy, though. We're all supposed to be afraid to go to the Mall of America now, or any mall, or maybe even Wally World, because you never know when ISIS is going to show up and just reduce your local Wally World to a heap of smoke and rubble. Mm-hmm. Be afraid, America. Be very afraid. But it turns out, and this is where the trouble comes in. It turns out that our pants-wetting right wing in this country has noticed that Mall of America has, oh my God, oh no, not that, a no guns policy at the Mall of America. Because the Mall of America, after all, hates freedom. Yeah. So, the obvious answer, if you check in with, say, oh, I don't know, the National Republican Rifle Association, is to make sure that everybody has a peacemaker strapped on when they go wandering into the Mall of America. I've been there. And, you know, the Mall of America is the great, what is it, the biggest mall in the world or in the United States or something. Maybe it's not the biggest in the world anymore. But it's got a real live, honest-to-goodness amusement park in the middle of it. Yeah, roller coasters and everything. And you can just, and I mean, they've got, I mean, the serious roller coasters and stuff. And you can just see Ma and Pa Second Amendment with the little Second Amendment munchkins. And everybody's got a piece, of course, riding the roller coaster, and, you know, it goes twirly, twirly, upside down, flings you sideways, that kind of thing. And right in the middle of the loop-de-loop, you notice that there's some headloppers done been standing down there waiting in line for the fried cheese curds. And as Carl Malden used to ask in the American Express commercials, what will you do? What will you do? Well, if you're a God-fearing, upstanding, Bible-believing, Second Amendment-supporting, Republican, Libertarian, Bircher, Deather, Tenther, Ninther, Booger-Eater, well, you'll just pop off a few shots when you get done with your loop-de-loop. And, you know, if you wing a couple of innocent bystanders, well, that's just the price we pay for freedom. I mention all of this because there's a report out, and I hope this is substantial, and I hope this is meaningful information. In the time that has passed since a Constitution freedom-loving mother named Mother Lanza gunned up her house and took her severely mentally unstable son out to the range to teach him how to shoot assault weapons, which he then took to Sandy Hook Elementary and chopped 20 children and 6 staff members into chutney with it, because freedom. It turns out that the National Rifle Association, from then until now, has increased their revenue, their annual revenues have increased by some one-tenth of $1 billion. Mm-hmm. In 2013, the NRA brought in $348 million. That was up by $92 million from 2012 revenues. In the single year that followed the massacre of the innocents at Sandy Hook, because freedom, because the tree of liberty must be watered from time to time with the blood of six-year-olds, it is its natural manure. In that year, among other things, contributions and grants to the NRA went up by $10 million. Program service revenue went up by $68 million from the prior year. Now, they didn't just go out and all buy a whole bunch of guns with it. They only spent $10 million extra on lobbying efforts. And look at the return on investment that they got. They did write a check for $14.5 million to their PR firm, because a lot of people in the immediate aftermath of the Sandy Hook massacre were a little pissed off at these enablers of death, mayhem, misery, and anguish. And the rapid-fire vivisection of six-year-olds. It took only 18 days according to this study. It took only 18 days after the Sandy Hook massacre for the National Slaughter Association to get them 100,000 new members. Sales of the very same weapon that Adam Lanza used to dismember six-year-olds went up by 36%. How's this for substance? How's this for a little snapshot of just how ungodly sick this country is? All that money they raised was used to good effect, and even though they only spent a paltry $10 million on lobbying, it was enough to make sure that we in America can't even ask for the most basic of safety regulations on the marketing and sale of firearms, i.e. the closing of the gun show loophole. Sorry. If somebody happens to gun down a family member, the NRA will be happy to tell you that you have just sacrificed your beloved in the name of freedom. Wolverines! Yeah. And so with all of that going on, I thought it might be interesting just because it's funny and because it's a take that I have never heard before. Kelly provided this to me. Goes back to 2014. This is an Australian comic by the name of Jim Jefferies, who does a better job as an Australian does a better job of dissecting the mass psychosis that is America's gun fetish than just about anybody else I've ever heard. So yeah, let's do take a moment or two. I mean, it's a long clip. Maybe we'll just bounce around and find some of the high points.
We're going to talk about something now that sort of splits the crowd a little bit. Gun control. Now, mate, wait, before you get, don't get excited because the other people have guns. The anti-gun people are like, yeah, do it, Jim. No, let's just shh. Now, before I start saying this, I want to say this, right? I believe in your right as Americans to have guns. I'm not trying to stop you from having guns. All I'm saying is this is my personal belief on the opinion. My opinion on the... it doesn't matter. I don't like guns. Right? I'm going to say some things that are just facts. Right? In Australia, we had guns. Right? Right up until 1996. And in 1996, Australia had the biggest massacre on earth. Still hasn't been beaten. And... Now, after that, they banned the guns. Now, in the 10 years before Port Arthur, there was 10 massacres. Since the gun ban in 1996, there hasn't been a single massacre since. I don't know how or why this happened. Maybe it was a coincidence, right? Now, please understand that I understand that Australia and America are two vastly different cultures with different people, right? I get it. In Australia, we had the biggest massacre on earth, and the Australian government went, that's it, no more guns! And we all went, yeah, right then, that seems fair enough. Really. Now, in America, you had the Sandy Hook massacre where little tiny children died, and your government went, maybe we'll get rid of the big guns? And 50% of you went, fuck you, go take my guns! So here's where it gets confusing, right? Now, as I said, I'm all for your Second Amendment rights. I think you should be able to have guns. It's in your constitution. What I am not for is bullshit arguments and lies. There is one argument and one argument alone for having a gun, and this is the argument. Fuck off. I like guns. It's not the best argument, but it's all you've got. And there's nothing wrong with it. There's nothing wrong with saying, I like something, don't take it away from me, but don't give me this other bullshit. The main one is, I need it for protection. I need to protect me, I need to protect my family. Really? Is that why they're called assault rifles? Is it? Never heard of these fucking protection rifles you speak of. Protection? What the fuck are you talking about? You have a gun in your house. You're 80% more likely to use that gun on yourself than to shoot someone else. And people think, well, that'll never happen to me. You don't know that, because you know what? From time to time, we all get sad. One day you're happy, then you're sad, and then... Protection? I had a break-in in Manchester, England, where I was tied up. I had my head cut. They threatened to rape my girlfriend. They came through the window with a machete and a hammer. And Americans always go, well, imagine if you had a gun. And I'm like, all right. I was naked at the time. I wasn't wearing my holster. I wasn't staring at the window waiting for cunts with machetes to come through. Like, what world do you live in where you're constantly fucking ready? You have guns because you like guns. That's why you go to gun conventions. That's why you read gun magazines. None of you give a shit about home security. None of you go to home security.
No. No, they don't.
Conventions. None of you read Padlock Monthly. None of you have a Facebook picture of you behind a secure door going, fucking yeah. Like you're going to be ready if someone comes in the house.
Right, skip a bit, brother.
If you agree with me, 50% of you don't agree with me. And I do respect the people who don't agree with me. Don't think I don't. Out of the 50% that don't agree with me, 20% of those people are smart enough to realize this is a comedy show and it's not to be taken seriously, and they're laughing along because it's just...
This is where we find out that Mr. Jeffries has apparently been in the United States of America long enough to really, really understand us. By the way, did you notice how easily he slips from his native Australian accent into American gun owner speak? That's a little frightening. Oh, mate, not a whole lot, but a little bit.
Right? And then the next 20% are sort of phased out a little bit and look around going, I wonder how they got that chandelier up there. And then there's the last 10% and they're fucking furious. Right now in this room and the people watching at home, 10% of you are fucking seething. Just... And for a couple of reasons. First reason, I'm making good points. Second reason, and this is the big one. I'm foreign. And that's pissing the fuck out of you right now. And your brain is on a loop and you can't fucking turn it off. And it's just going around in a circle and you're just going, if you don't like it, go home. If you don't like it, go home. And my answer to that is no. Came here legally, I paid my taxes, I'll say whatever the fuck I want. Your First Amendment means that I can say the Second Amendment sucks dicks. And... unless you're an American Indian, you're a fucking immigrant as well. So fuck off.
Amen. Amen. Now, that's not... okay, so that's a little comedy break for us, and that guy's brilliant. Jim Jeffries. Yeah. Look him up on YouTube. Bookmark that, just in case. You might want to memorize some of the points, because there's a lot of really, really good points in it. The one... He's gifted because he has the ability to make people laugh about things that I talk about and make people cry, like the fact that we have people in the new United States of America who are okay with 20 little six-year-olds getting chopped into chutney by semi-automatic weapons fire because they want to have guns. I'm sorry, that's just not funny. It's just... Which brings us, of course, to the response of the very self-same people, the people with that loop going in their head, you know, if you don't like it, go home. If you don't like it, go home. Right. Now, where are we going to find this? Of course, you know. We're going to find this in the home of slaughter support. Yeah, sure, of course. That's what those three babbling idiots in the morning are for. See, in Kilmeade and Hustlebuck. Yeah. Because, you know, freedom. And I guess they're going to talk to... Oh, go away. Oh, they're going to talk to Laura Ingraham. Oh, joy. Back it up. Beep, beep, beep. Okay.
Watching Fox and Friends right now. If you said the dangers are of an imperial executive who acts in this manner, mm-hmm. well, then you have to get involved on the phones because yeah. because this thing is going south.
Oh, don't stop now, Laura.
Really fast. And I fear for our Constitution.
Yeah, well, you know, I want to shift gears here, but also stay on the topic of danger. The Mall of America today is preparing for the worst, and they have been since yesterday after Al-Shabaab, the terror threat, they threw in their face right there saying that they were going to bring some harm. You know, they peeled back the curtain the mall did, showed the security floor. They're swabbing cars and bags. But now there's a lawmaker there urging that the fact that the Minnesota, they dropped the gun policy because they have a no-carry zone there. And he's saying that Americans should be able to protect themselves in a case like this. This is the Minnesota state lawmaker, Tony Cornish.
Right. The situation with Mall of America is completely ridiculous. It's the opposite of what they should be doing. If we're threatened with an attack of any type, the...
Now, just because we're dealing with video here and I'm seeing something you can't see, I have to tell you that this Cornish goober is, of course, wearing a cowboy hat. Just setting the scene, you know, little word pictures, right? Guy in cowboy hat. Wait a minute. Let's find. It's totally ridiculous that they don't have 40 caliber machine guns pointed at everybody who comes in the Mall of America, and that there aren't like, you know, it's 3-4 stories tall. Maybe how about drones with machine guns? That would be cool, wouldn't it? You just hope that the little pimply-faced teenager flying them is, you know, not a little trigger-happy.
Tony Cornish.
Right.
The situation with Mall of America is completely ridiculous. It's just the opposite of what they should be doing. If we're threatened with an attack of any type, the last thing you ever want to do is disarm citizens. If I were a terrorist, the first place that I would look to go to inflict harm or mass casualties would be a place where people were unarmed.
What do you think about that? Arm the shoppers?
Not a church? I mean, well, you know, right-wingers, they're probably taking howitzers to the sanctuary now, so I'm probably wrong about that.
I just like the hat. So if he's going to patrol personally...
Of course you do, Laura.
Look, I don't think we should jump every time, you know, the freaks with the ace bandages around their faces put out videos. The malls have always been soft targets in this country since, you know, before 9/11. Mm-hmm. We're always worried about security at malls. I do believe these no-gun policies, maybe they were passed with some degree of goodwill, but I've never thought they helped. I mean, how does that help? Someone who's going to commit a crime doesn't care about a no-gun policy. The only one who has to be worried about a no-gun policy is a law-abiding American mm-hmm. who is trained and proficient in the use of a firearm to protect oneself or others. So I don't think these gun policies generally work, and so I think if this is a point where we can have a debate about this, great. But these videos, I just think we react so emotionally to these videos. I think we should have a right. clear-headed debate right. about how to best
well,
secure the
well,
home.
Well, I'm sorry, Laura. You're not going to have a clear-headed debate on Fox. You might, on the other hand, have an empty-headed debate on Fox. I mean, that's what Elizabeth Hasselbeck and Steve Kilmoles, Deucey, whatever guy, that's what they're there for. Because, see, this might be an interesting time to revisit the fact that an experienced gun handler, nuclear scientist from Idaho Stan, was so terrified of the drive between her home and Wally World on the 26th day of December, I mean, it's Boxing Day after all, right? Well, not here, that she had to take her new Second Amendment purse with her to go to the day after Christmas shopping sale thingy at Wally World, at which point, when she turned away, her two-year-old reached into her Second Amendment purse and pulled out her Second Amendment remedy, and Second Amendment remedied Mommy. Mm-hmm. And, it was just last week, wasn't it, that we were discussing the God-fearing, upstanding, Bible-believing, evangelical, fundamentalist, right-wing politician of some stripe or another. Where was she from? Suddenly, I don't remember. But she couldn't quite, remember, she couldn't quite get her Freedom Protector, her Second Amendment remedy, squared away in her gun bra. And turned it around and looked at it, and I don't know, hooked the trigger in the underwire or something and shot herself right through the eyeball. Wolverine, bang! Yeah. And as Jim Jeffries in that clip pointed out, it is, in his words, a bullshit argument to think that you're just going to reach into your purse or your pants. And then there was the guy who had to take the wife's pink pistol with him to go get a loaf of bread and a jar of peanut butter down to the local grocery store. He was in Arizona and went to, because he forgot his holster, went to cram the little woman's Freedom Protector down in his pants and shot his dick off.
Wolverine!
Yeah. And the one thing that these right-wingers can't tolerate is the idea that we would go about our business and live our lives as unflinching, unterrified, uncowered, C-O-W-E-R-E-D, for the little right-wing weirdos out there. Without regard to whether, I mean, come on. Anybody want to check in with Vegas and find out what the relative odds are between being struck by lightning, winning the lottery, run over by an elephant in Missoula, Montana on the 4th of July and receiving a black eye, or being attacked by ISIS headloppers? I'm guessing your lottery odds are better. The lightning odds are better. And probably the elephant in Missoula is better. But then again, what was the chance that anybody was going to get Ebola? And look how we responded to that. An innocent woman had to camp out on, sleep in a tent out in the yard so Chris Christie could trundle down to keep an eye on her, you know, through the isolation unit bubble tent. Condominium thing. Yeah. Let's go back to the geniuses.
Plan without changing our way of life.
Well,
we can't change
our entire
way of life.
I know. Jay Johnson must be extra careful if you're shopping at the Mall
right.
of America.
Particularly careful.
You're particularly careful.
I've been to the Mall of America many times.
Yeah.
Good for you, Laura. Good for you. I'm glad you have. Which brings us to another point, though. I'm a lot more worried, and if we were to check with those self-same Vegas odds makers, and they are really, really good at what they do. I don't know how they do it, but they do it well. They get the money right on all the bets, just about. If we were to check in with those self-same odds makers, they would probably tell us that your odds of being shot by a freedom-protecting, God-fearing, Bible-believing, upstanding Christian patriot, evangelical fundamentalist are significantly higher than of you having your head lopped by ISIS, you know, there in Minneapolis. Yeah.
I'd only be careful about eating the fast food near the roller coaster.
The roller coaster is a little scary.
That's where the cheese curds are.
It goes fast. For indoors, it goes fast.
That'll make you sick real quick. Yeah, that's dangerous.
It was our own free time if human resources is watching.
No. The whole crew was there. We took a camera crew. Remember?
Oh, I remember that. You guys get all the fun trips.
We just do.
The RNC brought us there.
Oh, lovely.
We were there for the convention.
That's right.
The Republicans did not pay for our trip. We paid for our trip.
Well, that's what brought us. us there, though.
Because they had to cover the convention.
That's the way we
did. And instead, you were just having some fun.
All right.
And don't you guys, the ISIS, the Shabab, if these guys are such tough guys, why don't they take the ace bandages off their faces? I mean, it looks like the Return of the Mummy every time we see one of these videos.
I
mean, aren't we all sick of we're sick of them. Yeah. We're sick of their stupid tactics. They're evil. We need Muslims to come forward and take back their faith from these terrorist evil thugs. This needs to be exposed. They need to be satirized and ridiculed, and then we need to kill everything.
Wait. Her name's Laura Ingraham. Laura Bush ran down and killed her boyfriend back in the early 1960s. We need for Laura Ingraham to stand up and condemn Laura Bush because, I mean, Laura's, right?
Last one of them.
All right. Laura Ingram's going to go
That's
do her radio
that
show.
No.
You just pull your...
That's enough of that. And again, it has nothing to do with these idiots saying that. It has to do with the sodden-pantsed nonagenarians and others sitting at home going, yeah, I reckon we're going to cancel that vacation trip to the Mall of America, Marvelline. I mean, if I can't take my freedom protector to take care of you, darling, it ain't worth the risk. We'll just put our Sunday go to meet and clothes on like we always do to go to Walmart. Oh, dear God, don't help Marty. Why would the headloppers be trying to get to Mall of the Americas when the Las Vegas Strip is closer? Shh. Yeah. Oh, by the way, I didn't mention it at the beginning of the program. If you want to join in one of the most enjoyable evenings of madcap mayhem and merrymaking, head on over to the headonradionetwork.com chat room, headonradionetwork.com/chatroom. Pick yourself out a screen name and a password and jump right in. Good evening, Blake and Madison. Good evening, Cali Liberal. And, of course, News Ninja Carol Baker. Devin's with us this evening. John and Kathy and Kelly and Laborman are with us. Michael and Mo Liberal and Ron and Stockton Larry have joined us as well, as have Texas T and Todd. That's a nice crowd of folks, and plenty of room for y'all if you want to pop in. All capably moderated by Lottie and Texas Betsy and Third Stage Guild Navigator Sparky, who is also incarnated as his man cave persona. Wander on by. I think you'll enjoy it. So, Laura Ingraham sits there and says, don't be afraid. And then they proceed to tell you to be very afraid. And there's Kenner Gen X, who just wandered into the chat room. Welcome. Lots of folks in there. Good fun, good will, good time. So you get an idea that we're pretty well loaded for bear on this here Titanic Tuesday. Note coming in from Jeremy in Vermont. In regard to, I'm not sure if it's Elizabeth Hasselbuck or Laura Ingraham, Jeremy says, I've said it before, Bob, if this effing airhead didn't have the huge loopy earrings hanging out of her ears, her head would float off to the stratosphere. Laura, you ignorant fool. Timothy McVeigh used not a single gun or maul and was still able to kill and maim hundreds. And you know what? There's not a single Freedom Protector Second Amendment remedy out there that would have stopped him. Nope. There's a little bit of hope for America. It turns out that 78% of us, which is a 3/4 majority. That's not some little pissant 2/3 majority. That's a 3/4 majority plus. And we want mandatory vaccinations, what have you, for all children. Well, that's your socialist agenda. Mm-hmm. Remember, well, now let's see. Let's get into that maybe in the second hour because, well, I've filibustered the first hour away. And we are, of course, still waiting for the first contribution to roll in to help us reach our $150 fundraising goal this evening. Or if someone wants to have a show on me, that would be fine, too. And thank you to all of you who have kept us a little bit out front, out ahead of the lupine pest who nips and chomps at our heels. Thank you very, very kindly. So, yeah, we got a break coming. And after that, your calls. You know the numbers, of course, 304-574-8178 or 304-663-4676. The first one, 304-574-8178. We call that the Skype line. Doesn't mean you have to use Skype. And we call the second line, just to differentiate it, 304-663-HORN. We call that the Gizmo line. We've got somebody on the Skype line waiting, and we will go to the Gizmo line right after that if somebody's on there. But, yeah, break coming. This is listener-supported conversation radio, unlike any other. This is The Horn. I'm Bob Kincaid.
Should be here.
gone shopping. Because that is, of course, the purpose, just about the sole purpose of the United States of America, you know, apart from bombing brown people, here in the second half of the second decade of the, you know, 21st century. This is the Horn Titanic Tuesday, the 24th of February, 2015. Over to the Skype line. Hey, welcome to the program.
I thought I would call about the fear of the United States.
I'm glad you did, John. You know, what's up?
I'm sitting here in Southern California, not bragging or anything, looking at all the crazy people walking around. Of course, that's pretty much the state, so that's neither here nor there. But you brought up something interesting.
I did?
I read an article. Oh, God, this has been 3 or 4 years ago. And it was the marketing and sales program for news services. Now, this article was written, 20 years ago, 25 years ago. And it was a article about the reality that you don't actually sell news anymore because they're now all entertainment division. And to entertain people, you have to excite them. Informing them is not profitable. You have to attack their emotions. You have to get them, back in the early days, I used to be in the newspaper business, and they had a line called, if it bleeds, it leads.
Right.
And in the present day news service, it's, you know, scare the hell out of them. The head whoppers, the Ebola, your dollar, buy gold now because the economy is about to fall, then I'm William Devane. Aren't you worried about all those people in government getting rid of, doing all this stuff, blah, 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 blah. And to many people, Fox News is almost entirely, their entire market plan is to the senior citizen, the old, what is it, that one movie, the American President, where the president went on that tirade towards the end of the movie where he's like, you look back for a time when it was, things were simpler and everybody.
Oh, is that the Michael Douglas and Ed Benning vehicle?
Yeah. And, it was a speech for a movie and it had, you had to take it within that context, but there was an underlying truth there that so many people, I talk to a lot of older people, and they're like that. This new world scares the hell out of them. Many of them are senior citizens. They don't get out as much. They're not in the workforce anymore, and they're just there, and they sit and watch that TV day in and day out. And, send us your money, buy gold now, you're worried about inflation, or you've got that disgraced Senator Thompson on there talking about reverse mortgages, let's take your house away from you when you die instead of leaving it to your children, we're just going to make you live high on the hog while you're alive, and then when you're dead, we'll just take the house from you, and that just seems to be the way things are nowadays, and I see it everywhere I go, especially in the South. It's like, a lot of things you've been talking about, nullification, everything. It's like if you hear it on Fox News, you can almost click a stopwatch, and within 1 or 2 days, you're hearing this stuff bouncing back from the population at large. And it just, they are scared to death. They are utterly, completely scared to death.
Absolutely. And that's John, that's why I refer to us as a coward nation. COWERED.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. And I really truly believe that they do a disservice to these people because, let's face it, I read a white paper about 5 years ago that was a thing about the, consequences of 9/11, and the proposal put forth by that paper. Now I don't know how true or untrue it is, but they actually put forth a surmisement that while we will see more of the lone wolf gun-toting Yahoo pretending to want to be part of ISIL is what is now called ISIL. Back then they were referring more to Al-Qaeda and the spinoffs. But to bring that paper into in our conversation now, I'll modernize it slightly. They're saying flat out that that there probably won't be another quote-unquote mass terrorism attack, at least done by any of the organized quote-unquote terrorist groups, because look what happened. You know, as the Chinese diplomat said back when it happened, he said, "You stupid people, you poked the dragon with a stick." Not smart.
Right, at which point we then attacked the wrong country.
Yeah, we attacked the wrong country, but the fact remains is we attacked, and we killed millions of people. We totally flipped out the entire Middle East, and I'm willing to bet, and this is maybe just me talking, but I'm willing to bet that the people of ISIS and ISIL and all them, they'll raise hell over there all they want. I strongly believe that they do not want to take another chance at poking us with a stick again.
Not to fearmonger, because that's not my purpose here. But remember, the manifesto that came out after September the 11th said that the purpose was to destroy our economy. And guess what?
Mm-hmm.
It worked.
Yeah, it worked. And I'm not saying it can't happen, but I'm just, you know.
It didn't work, but it sort of helped us along the way. I mean, the hedge fund managers and the Wall Street speculators and the J.P. Morgan Chases and the Merrill Lynches and the AIGs did it a hell of a lot more, but, you know, they got tweaked.
Well, yeah, I mean, that was Bin Laden's plan. In fact, he had, if you remember that video he put out, badly translated as it was what he was talking about, was to bankrupt the country. That's one of the reasons why the Twin Towers were targeted, because to the people in the Middle East, the Twin Towers represented the financial center of the United States. But it's always been a war of, it's like a psychological war, again, my opinion. But I've said it sometimes tongue in cheek. I've said it the most surprised person on 9/12 was probably Osama bin Laden himself, because he probably looked at it and went, "Oh,
it worked.
My God,
it worked.
You know, because like so many of them, he probably had it as a plan that you know, we're gonna do this. Give me some money, and keep getting funding. But the fact that it actually pulled it off. I think there are days that I wouldn't be a bit surprised if there were days he was saying, "Man, I wish I had rethought that." You know, probably a few seconds before you guys had blown off, but still. But you know, like I said, there's, you know, it's maybe I can, let me rephrase it. Maybe I am being just a little bit too naive, but I just have this feeling that if another 9/11 style super terrorist attack happens, I would think that considering how reactionary we got before, imagine how reactionary we get the second time around. I would not be a bit surprised if we went on and just turned into a freaking, you know, you talk about die empire. Hell, we may go out just like Rome. We just go out and start conquering. Just say, okay, we can't keep you guys from keep coming after us.
We're not competent enough to do that.
Oh, come on, Ron. Have some optimism. We got some people. We got kids who can joystick their way through a maze. We can figure it out.
No, we can't.
We can fight any war as long as it's on PS3. PS5, what is this these days? PS5 or whatever. Hell, I'm so behind in technology, it's not even funny. I had this, another call in today, I had thought these cell phones were no longer allowed to be used. We're not allowed to be used for freaking marketing, but I'm getting calls now, and which is really amazing because credit, I don't have credit. Walmart won't give me credit. That's how bad my credit is. And then I get this call from this lady. Your credit card is about to be shut down. You need to call us so we can make arrangements to get your credit card readjusted so we can get you better credit. I'm going, don't you people ever look at Google? I have a credit score.
I think you've got the wrong number.
I think I got a credit score of 3. Actually, my problem is I never borrowed any money, so I don't think I have bad credit.
You probably don't even exist, right? Yeah.
Well, I have no credit, and if I've never demonstrated the willingness to pay anybody back fake money for fake things, then you know, go figure. But the conversation it was interesting because it dovetails right into the thoughts that I see every day. You know, there's this. You got on one hand, you got that kind of Yahoo, you know, turn them into glass kind of thing. You know, we just do, you know, stop screwing around with them. Let's just turn that into a giant parking lot and build a Walmart on it. And then you got the other side of the fence that are just, I mean, they're scared to death.
Yeah, you always get, you know, the, I think we should just turn them into glass.
Yeah.
But then they fall all apart when you look at them and say, well, okay, that's your position. How do you feel about other countries that want to turn us into glass?
Yeah.
And you generally, brooga, brooga, America, God bless you, leave! You know.
We didn't do it. They're not in it. They like the idea, but they're not willing to think of the consequences of what would happen to us if we did. I mean, granted, the complaints were myriad, the protests were huge, but the world did not totally turn their backs on us when we invaded Iraq, but if we were to detonate a nuclear weapon, we'd be pariahs. Nobody would touch us.
Yeah, we kind of got a hall pass on the first two we used on a foreign country.
One great advantage to George Bush. You know, he was such an idiot that everybody looked at him and went, "Oh, geez, now we figured it out." But we get somebody in there like Jeb Bush and he ends up doing something like that, no. There won't be a pass on that one. Yeah. Then I don't know. But I'll kind of take a second and give you a buzz and let me show my ignorance for a minute and I shall now go away and cry my soup about the doom of the world and, you know, stupid it hurts us, I think it is.
It burns us up.
Oh, it hurts often, you know. But I'm watching this panhandler on the corner over here near the truck stop, and it's like, you know, it comes back to the thing I've said so many times. You know, granted, some of them are, you know, they get to where they are by their own actions, but the fact that somebody has no place to live or no nutritious food to eat simply because they don't have little green pieces of paper with vignettes of dead famous people just bothers me. It really does.
And I've got a libertarian greatest hits on that coming up, so by all means do not tune out once you hang up, John.
Oh no, I listen to you fairly. Actually, every last few weeks I've become like, I think I might actually say I'm a regular listener on Dave, so
welcome to the Horn Family Commune Congregation.
You know, I don't, as soon as my check clears this week, I tried to do the PayPal thing earlier this weekend, but for some reason there was a thing, unless I was on the wrong site, they had a thing that was like, our site is down because of some terrible thing happened. And
No, Head On Radio Network. Oddly enough, we run into this problem.
Yeah.
HeadOnRadioNetwork.com. Not HeadOnRadio.com. You gotta add network.
Okay, maybe that was what happened, because I was looking at it, it didn't look quite right, and I was like, I hadn't heard him say anything about it, because it sounded like it was like, well, due to some catastrophic thing happening, and then,
we had some problems a couple of weeks ago, but those were remedied fairly quickly.
Yeah, I was slightly concerned, because I also listened to, I've got a couple of shows off of the PRN network. That have a couple of shows, and apparently, and although they're not talking about it as of yet, but something major happened over there, because they're one of the shows I was listening to. He's actually talking about it. He's not even sure if he's going to be back on next week or not, because, and that's the thing about any type of media of what you would loosely call liberal media. I mean, it's like these things have such a hard time. I mean, you do your thing, and, you know, I help a little bit I can, and a lot of people do help. But I listen to a fair number of shows, and they all seem to be the same problem. If they don't have some Daddy Warbucks, Koch Brother, you know, American Heritage Foundation underwriting them, then they're struggling. And they constantly struggle, and yet the message is just, and to be polite, we'll say the message is just as viable as anything on the right, yet they don't have the corporate sponsorship. And I ran into an argument with a guy a couple of days ago about this stuff. He was talking about, you know, why Fox News is so important, you know, why it does well, and why the Air America died out. And I said, yeah, because most liberal, quote-unquote liberal ones, are not business financed. And he goes, what do you mean? I said, well, if you didn't buy gold now or anything like that, if you participate and you buy that gold, that reinforces the advertiser, and the advertiser then spends more money on that network. Great. But that's just good. You, the customer, are actually still the one funding the program. But you're funneling it through a corporation buying whatever goods and services they have. You'd actually be better off if you wanted to talk about anything. You'd be better off just writing a small money order or a check or something right to the damn program and filtering it through these damn companies who are only going to...
Well, you know, it's interesting. It's almost like kismet that you would raise this issue, because I was thinking about this very thing earlier. Because sitting in the chair where I sit, this can be a very humbling experience. Because among other things, John, I refuse to compete. I won't go out and do that whole self promotion. I'm the slickest thing since snot on glass. No. And so I feel real humility to know that for 10 years people have kept this effort on the air. I mean, it is humbling in the extreme.
And you deserve it.
But here's the interesting part, because I got to I think in terms of if this, then that, and sometimes I think in terms of opposites. For instance, let's say a for-profit broadcast outlet gets a big advertising contract with, say, Caterpillar. And it doesn't much matter that Caterpillar is critical to the ongoing destruction of Central Appalachia. Couldn't do it without them. Those great big D9 dozers, those big-ass trucks with tires the size of houses. But let's say, you know, the company gets a $2 million advertising buy from them. Does anybody behind the microphone there or in front of the camera, however we define it, does anybody feel an abiding sense of respect and humility toward Caterpillar? Because I can't imagine. I can't imagine it. But on the other hand, what we have going on here induces that respect and brings out what I hope is the best in me as a matter of regard for the people who are there every night tuning in to participate in this conversation. And I just can't imagine that over there in corporate world, there are people that there are people sitting around the table going, God, those guys at Caterpillar are so awesome. And I don't think there's a comparison between the two, and I don't know that I would want to trade one for the other.
Well, and you brought it up when you started your conversation today, Keith Oberman. Let us, for the moment, let's start with exactly what you said. He has, you know, in a country that quote-unquote has the right of free speech, okay, we'll argue that some other day. He didn't say or do anything wrong, but the people he works for ESPN. And Penn State, like him or not, is a major, you know, is a major football franchise in the college operations. The people that own ESPN would have difficulty dealing with Penn State if Penn State said to ESPN establishment, we don't feel we can get a fair shake because you're one of your primary broadcasters, one of your primary spokespeople, has demonstrated an obvious dislike to us. we don't feel we'll get good, you know, fair coverage. Now, yes, no, maybe, who knows? But to the bean counters and the check writers, that's almost a declaration of war. Oh my God, because, you know, I don't know how much Penn State advertises or whether or not they show the games who or how that mechanic works. I mean, it's, you know, there's a wide variety of revenue streams in media. But, you know, that's the thing. You know, the money, and here, and I'll try to see if I can say this right. English is not my first language, obviously. The money that you get is what I call honest money. Because it's given by people who, for the vast majority of my students, are not wallowing in it.
No, we don't have any wallowers.
I notice that some nights you don't make your quota or whatever. And you know, that's because, you know, they're people, but, you know, every one of them have to balance whatever their life, you know, life expenses are and what have you, and they have to take and say, well, you know, this, how much do I have for this, that, something else? And so you get a piece of the discretionary money, okay, and you more than deserve it. And it's honest money because the people that give you the money, they actually are, in effect, saying to you, what you do has value. And it's informative, it's insightful, and it, in some ways, makes, for me at least, it makes a connection that I don't feel quite as an island in the middle of nowhere through these waves. Because I work in an industry which is very right-wing.
Oh.
I mean, trust me.
I'm honestly not sure which is more right-wing, coal mining or over-the-road truck driving.
Well, I'm getting ready here, after, you know, in an hour or so, I get to go in here and have me a little meal and sit down at a table. And this particular truck stop, I can get some usually good conversations and what have you. But I can guarantee freaking to you that it's going to be largely, you know, they may not go so far as to say that Kenyan usurper in the White House. But the words they'll use.
Well, that's because that's just the that's just the silent dog whistle. They don't even have to say that amongst themselves anymore because they already know it to be true. It's it has risen from an assertion to an article of faith.
Well, yeah, I mean, the most dangerous thing that's out there right now, and this is the part that bothers me, I think, as much as anything else. We had two freaking elections for president. The healthcare program was a central format in both elections, less so the second one than the first one. The people have spoken, but to the right wingers, they are in actual war with the rest of the country. As far as they're concerned, and I mentioned this kind of in backhanded back some time ago about Kissinger's little paper he wrote about the revolutionary power. These people do not believe that Barack Obama, that Nancy Pelosi, or any of the so-called Democrats or anything else, they do not see them as legitimate. And therefore, anything that they can do to undermine it, just within my freaking lifetime, and I'm not that old, when the other party got into power, they worked together. They may blow raspberries at each other. They may chuck pieces of food at each other and call each other names. But when the rubber met the road, they gave a little. They gave a little. You know, you take a little, I'll take a little, and we'll come up with something, and we got some stuff done. But these last 6 years increasingly have got to the point where these SOBs up there, they just, what was it? Maybe I just heard from you today. I listen to some of these programs. I sometimes was tracked. I listened to a program today where officially they have voted 57 times to outlaw or break health care.
Right, yes.
Well, it turns out that the young man I was talking to, he got into actually counting them because he's a big congressional watcher. And he says, well, they had to go back and recount it. And it turns out that between the procedural votes and other things, it turned out they'd done it 67 freaking times. 67 freaking times to try to under the law that takes, frankly, crappy health care away from people, but it's health care nonetheless. And they want to basically go back to the freaking, oh, you got the existing edition? So sorry. You know.
Yeah. I've been looking for it while we've been talking, John. And I'm hoping I can find it. There she is. So the governor's conference has been meeting. And, you know, there's a bunch of Republican governors now. So Nimrata Haley, and that's her real name. Her real name's not Nikki any more than Piyush Jindal's name is Piyush. Bobby. His real name's Piyush. But they can't use their real names because they're running as Republicans, and that means that they are running to be elected by a base that is inherently prejudiced and bigoted. So Nimrata's got to call herself Nikki, and Piyush has to call himself Bobby and invent this story about his favorite Brady was little Bobby. Oy. So she's at the governor's conference meeting, and, of course, that one in our White House had the nerve, the audacity, to go and address them. And on her Facebook page, Nimrata Haley wrote, "In our meetings with the president," you know, she's governor of South Carolina, Stan, the home of American sedition. "In our meetings with the president, he said he wanted to work with the governors because we get things done. True, but when we asked about our problems with illegal immigration, he said he's not sending 11 million people back and offered us no help. When it come to the Keystone Pipeline, his response was, never gonna happen. When it come to health care and the Supreme Court ruling, and we asked for flexibility in establishing market-based health care, he said, you should start a state exchange. It takes two sides, Mr. President, to work together." Don't you love that? The phrase that jumped out at me, John, was market-based solutions. What the Affordable Care Act, invented by the Flippin' Heritage Foundation, is a market-based solution. If we don't have a market-based solution, I want to know where the universal single-payer health care is. God, these people are stupid.
It's, you sit here and you look at these people and you, some days I wake up and I listen to the radio or let's talk to people and I wonder, is there a magic ray that's orbiting the planet that like once a day passes over and burns out half the synapses of certain people? Because it has to.
I don't know. Maybe I everything keeps coming back to like Men in Black for me, and Will Smith and Tommy Lee Jones are just walking around using that flashy thingy on random people and then telling them, and by the way, when we're done here, you're going to watch Fox News.
It scares the hell out of me sometimes to sit there and watch these people. And if you're like me, and I love to hang around old bookstores, and I used to hang around where you would grab a book from the 1960s that would still be on the shelf. And they would talk about, for instance, I loved reading the books like for the prediction books. You know, 1960s, 1970s, early 80s, you know, talking about with the technology coming, this is how our workforce is going to be looking like and how this is going to be going on. And all these little predictions that I remember reading as, you know, a teenager and stuff. And what scares the damn bots out of me is that one of the most predominant predictions that existed was that the workforce of the United States would be so productive and generate so much revenue that the average person would only have to work 20 hours a week and would be mostly doing that from home using telepresence and, telecommunications. They used the term telecommunications back then because the internet was still kind of a seed in somebody's eye.
Yeah.
And
I'm still waiting for my helium. I'm still waiting for my helium filled pants.
Yeah, I'm waiting for my flying car myself, but that's me.
There's one of those out there. I saw the video just the other day, and it's really cool as can be.
Yeah, cool as can be. I'm driven by a robot, which will put me out of a job. Thanks a lot there, Bob.
No, this was just a little two-seater coupe.
Oh, no, they'd freaking, I don't remember. I was skimming across a European website, and they've got a prototype truck out there running around on a test track right now that's full-size trailer, tractor, all 9 yards, runs by robot.
Are you a reader of science fiction?
Oh, I used to be a Trekkie, but
well, there's I asked because you mentioned the robot trucks, and I've mentioned on the program several times lately how taken I am with the Takeshi Kovacs series trilogy by Richard K. Morgan. He's got another one that in the rest of the world is sold as Black Man, and in the United States is sold as 13. And it's a little nearer in the future than, say, the Kovacs books are, but you might enjoy that. Just because the great science fiction is the stuff that just immerses you in a world as if you were reading it in the present time with the narrator. And that's the little feat that Richard K. Morgan has been able to pull off so many times. And you might just enjoy it because not enjoy it because there's robot driven semis.
Oh yeah, we live in a world right now that the productivity of the American worker is so high because that the value of that work has been basically snatched by the ownership class because they own technology, they own the infrastructure that this stuff is being done, and the poor guy who's using a forklift
doesn't that really put the onus on us to figure out how we're going to stay alive when they've managed? Because it's been a steady progression. The people who used to spot weld automobile bodies were replaced by robots a long damn time ago.
Yeah.
On assembly line.
Are you familiar with the concept modern monetary theory?
No.
Okay. Short. I'm gonna try to edit this as quick as I can and make it short because I don't want to bog your time down. In 1971, when Nixon took us off the gold standard, made the final steps to take us off the gold standard, our money became essentially what's called fiat money.
I know. Yes, fiat money. I speak fiat.
Okay. Now the thing that the big, and it's not a secret, but it's not understood by most people, is that money does not exist anymore. It is not backed by anything. It is not attached to anything. If, think of it this way, let's do a kind of a BS kind of shortcut example. If a hacker broke into your bank account, and instead of taking money out, he slapped a couple extra zeros onto it, and was able to do it without the bank detecting through their auditing systems to detect the difference, you would have extra money in your account that you'd go out and spend. And you'd go to the store and you'd swipe the card or go to an ATM and take the money out, and nothing would be said. The government, and you've got the computer in front of you. I think it's one of the sections early on about the creation of currency. I'd have to pull my paperwork down here to pull it back up. But basically, the government of the United States has, the federal government has been granted through the Constitution the power to create and to value currency. Back when the last big shutdown was trying to occur, everybody was trying to push Obama to mint out a trillion-dollar coin. And the right wing lost their freaking minds, because the reality is that he could very easily have done that. Could very easily have done that. And it is actually legal to do that, because the government can make money out of thin air. They have allowed the private banking system to do it through debt creation. 95% of the money that's done in this country right now is bank money. It's created when you go to get a mortgage, or you buy a car, or you've got a credit card. You write a contract with the bank, and the bank basically backs whatever purchases you make with this bank money.
I get all of that.
Right, but the monetary theory states, as its basic premise, is that the reason why our economy is not doing as well as it could be doing is because we've allowed the private banking systems to control the money creation process and attach an interest rate to it. Because if you borrow money to buy a house, the bank will create the money through the writing of a check or whatever to buy the house, but they do not create the money to pay the interest. And there's always a discrepancy between the money that's created and the money that needs to be paid back. And so we're constantly trying to run to catch up. When you go out and you make money to pay back the loan, you're paying back the loan plus interest that you have to derive from some other source. You're always losing money in the process, and the banks pick up the difference. The government
sounds like a slot machine parlor at the dog track.
Well, it's a giant Ponzi scheme, is what it boils down to. The government could pay off its debt. The $18 trillion in debt could be paid off tomorrow. But to do so uncontrolled would cause chaos in the financial system, because our money is now just a matter of faith and credit in the United States. If you start screwing around on a massive level and you scare the hell out of everybody, all the right wingers and gold merchants would go crazy, because, oh my God, our money's not worth anything.
No, the gold bug.
It's all crazy. That's one of the reasons you have the vein out there. You know, buy gold now because of the economy. You know, they're worried about the debt. The debt is nothing but a damn piece of paper. That can be changed. People standing on the street corner, for the moment,
John, I get that. My hackles kind of raise when I hear that, because I remember when George W. Pinhead, I mean Bush, went to the United States Bureau of the Public Debt, which happens to be housed in Parkersburg, West Virginia, and said, "See this filing cabinet? It's full of a bunch of worthless IOUs." Describing the debt of the United States, which there's actually constitutional language that says no one, and by no one we mean not even the president, shall question the validity of the public debt.
Exactly. But here's the trick. The Constitution was written back in a time when they actually had to make the coins out of gold.
Oh, yeah, way up into the 19th century, the most common currency in the United States was the Spanish piece of eight.
Right. But we live in a world now where it's you are paid what the quote-unquote market and the company that you work for thinks your services are worth, and you will only be paid that as long as that company cannot find a way to replace you. I've said this many a time when, you know, the right wing would complain about, I never got a job from a poor man. Yeah, I mean, you never got a job from a rich one either. He's only going to hire you as long as he can make money off of you. The minute that you no longer are profitable to him, that he cannot extract
right. more value from your labor. And that goes back to my assertion previously, John, that I think that maybe some of the better thinking or some of the more useful thinking we could do out there would be to figure out how to take care of each other as we, as human beings, become less and less important within the grand scope of productivity. Because the whole goal is ultimately to make us, to render us all either superfluous or obsolete.
Yeah. Well, I've argued that I have a personal plan, which I, of course, will never go anywhere because I have no political power. But I've always asked the question, why does a business have to cover the full freight and cost of hiring somebody to work? And I'm taking way too much time here, so I'll do this and then jump off here. But my idea has always been that the company, as part of the market forces, would offer you a benefits package, healthcare, vacation, whatever perks that they want to give you as an incentive to come work for them. But the actual dollar wages that you receive at the end of the week in a check, that should just come from a central, like I said, monetary creation, from a central clearinghouse, because that money's going to end up mostly back in the economy anyway.
Well, that's why it always makes sense to have programs that benefit, you know, poor people, because poor people don't save money. They just pump it right back into the economy. That's why it's better, for instance, to go to a local restaurant than a chain like Olive Garden or Bob Evans or Cracker Barrel, because you're circulating the money inside the local economy and you're actually seeing it do real good. But I got to roll on here. I want to make sure that we get all the calls in. It's been a fascinating conversation. No, don't apologize. It's been a fascinating conversation, and I appreciate it.
Yeah, okay. Well, my regards to everyone, and I'll try to seek out the more appropriate website, and we'll see what happens. Thanks a lot.
All right. Thanks, John. Bye now.
Bye-bye.
Our buddy John, the truck driver, presently on assignment in Southern California, which beats the daylights out of being on assignment in Central West Virginia. It is about 8 minutes before the hour. I'm going right back over to the Gizmo line. Let me extend thanks, though, first. Thanks going out to Angel and to Brett and to our buddy Jug of Punch. We are now only $90 away from our fundraising goal for the evening. I wanted to share something with you because I was talking about the difference, I don't know, between having millions of listeners and not, and feeling a sense of camaraderie and community with one's community. A lovely note came in from Felicia last night. She said, still listening and still enjoying, just can't make it to the live broadcast. Hard for you to know how much being part of the Horn community means to me. And she said, the very least I could do is help others have a show on me. You bring so much sanity, comfort, and laughter. And that just... hit me all the way down to the ground last night. Because, well, we don't have the Gulf Stream 5 that Flush Flimball has, but I don't have the OxyContin Jones he has. I don't have a woman in a pit like he has. But I feel like we've got something that is far more special and, in fact, if we want to use such a vulgar term, far more valuable. And that's a fact. Over to the Gizmo line. Hey, welcome to the program.
Hey, good afternoon, Bob.
What's happening, Kevin?
Not much. I was listening to a radio show earlier today, and caller to the show pointed out, you've heard Rudy Giuliani proclaiming that Obama doesn't love America.
Oh, sure.
And this caller pointed out something I thought was pretty poignant. What Democrat have you heard stand up and defend the president on the national level? Not many.
Yeah, I'm trying. I think maybe I ran across a couple of people, but, you know, They don't immediately
like
come to
mind. Nobody like Pelosi or Harry Reid or Wasserman Schultz. Nobody like that. And it really is a microcosm of one of the things that's wrong with our Democratic Party that this caller was pointing out. We don't stand up, and I'm not talking about the Warren community, I'm talking about the Democratic Party in general. We don't come out and take a stand to defend something as stupid as an accusation as that Obama doesn't love America. He was the first black elected president. What other country but here, with its group of white right-wingers that we have, could he have been elected president of in the way he was for two different terms? And yet Giuliani wants to proclaim that Obama doesn't love America. And the other thing that I felt from this show today, I'm finally starting to hear it. I've heard it here on Horn and Malloy for quite a while. But I'm starting to hear it on the national level now about how the Democrats won't stand with the president, run away from the president like Allison Grimes in Kentucky and this last election where they ran away from anything progressive. And finally, I think progressive talkers are beginning to get the idea that, gee, maybe our Democratic leaders are failing us by not speaking out on progressive values. It only took them, what, 8 years, 6 years? And I just wanted to make that point because I really want to remain a Democrat as far as political parties, but it's getting harder and harder to do that when they can't even defend the President of the United States against such a stupid assertion as that. And you talked about Oberman today. Where else besides America do we not know the difference between enabling a child rapist and fundraising for cancer research, which was the point, exact point Oberman was making and got suspended for it? And I don't really see too many people standing up, sticking up for Oberman. And it just, and yet Bill O'Reilly's still on the TV every night, and like you talked about with that lawsuit that he had against him. So when I, you know, like your, I forget her name now, you just read her name, but like that woman just talked about, this is one of the few places where you're going to hear the kind of talk that's needed in progressive circles. So that's, I just wanted to call and say thank you to all the Horn family for talking the way we do. You're talking with John earlier, what he was talking about and what you and him were conversing about is the kind of talk that's needed. And I guarantee you we wouldn't have got 2 minutes worth of that talk on some national talk show where the host could only take maybe if the caller's lucky, a minute of the call, of the host time. So anyway, that's all I gotta say. I just wanted to say thank you for being there for us and for the Horn family being there, because when you think about it, with the number of people we have that are nationally known in their writings, you know, it's nice to know they're all part of this Horn family. So that's really all I had to say.
All right. Well, thank you, Kevin. I appreciate everything you do bring to the conversation, and I think it's especially telling what you said about people not standing up for the president, even when he does stuff that we like, to wit. It's worth noting that today, as he promised he would, President Obama vetoed the really stupid, misguided, toxic, poisonous, disaster waiting to happen, won't provide more than 10 or 20 or 30 jobs, tops permanently, Keystone XL pipeline. And this is, you know, this is another case of the right wings, really, I think over there at RNC headquarters, or at least in John Boehner's office, he's got a fanboy poster of Wile E. Coyote standing there on his Acme rocket skates, because this if we had anything resembling liberal progressive media, this would backfire on them spectacularly, because.
Yeah.
Let me offer you a piece of bipartisan thinking, if you will. I don't care if the president is a Democrat or Republican. That bill, when it arrived on the president's desk, should have been vetoed for a very simple reason. The Keystone XL pipeline and whether or not to build it is a matter of the executive branch's prerogatives relative to the fact that the president constitutionally is delegated the authority for foreign policy. If the Constitution delegated foreign policy to the House, to the Senate, to both of them, it would be completely appropriate for the House and Senate to pass a bill saying, build thou the Keystone XL pipeline and stand not upon the order of thy building, but build at once. And whatever thy right hand findeth to, for thou to do, do thy doggondest. But that's not how it works.
No.
The bill should have been vetoed regardless of how one even feels about the Keystone XL pipeline, because that process is a process of foreign policy because the damn thing crosses an international boundary. So what you have is Boehner and Senator Turtle trying to usurp, hey, look, usurpation. Turns out the Kenyan's not the one doing it.
Yep.
They were trying to usurp the president's authority. And as such, it had to be vetoed. Otherwise, the constitutional separation of powers becomes meaningless.
Yep.
How many people are pointing that out? I mean, this is breaking news today. President vetoes Keystone XL pipeline. I guess that's maybe at least linguistically true. He vetoed an arguably unconstitutional bill that was passed by both houses of Congress, which usurped his authority.
Yep.
The fact of the matter is, it should have been, if Congress had any regard for the Constitution whatsoever, They would have let the process unfold naturally, organically, if you will, within the constitutional framework as it is established relative to the separation of powers. So I guess we can have a little party in the frozen streets out there tonight, those of us who are still freezing, saying, yay, the Keystone XL pipeline's been vetoed. But in point of fact, it was the only right thing to do. Even before you consider whether or not building the Keystone XL pipeline was the right thing to do.
Yeah.
And I hope that distinction makes some, I mean, I hope that's not a distinction without a difference. Secondly, to go back to what you were saying about the people not supporting the president relative to noun verb 9/11 Giuliani's remarks, I was reminded the minute you brought that up, Kevin, of a cartoon that Bless his non-theist, non-believing self, Bart Kopp, used to talk about all the time. And he used to run an editorial cartoon from the Clinton 90s that showed Bill Clinton standing there with a great big chef's butcher knife sunk in his back. And written on the blade was Dems, D-E-M-S. Because Democratic members of Congress not being fully supportive of a Democratic president, well, hell, that's almost a tradition in this country. Now, Republicans, by God, they line up, they march lockstep, they follow Reagan's 11th commandment, thou shalt not speak ill of another Republican, and, well, you know, never has heard a discouraging word. Democrats, on the other hand, not so much. So I'm not surprised, I guess is what I'm saying.
Yeah, and it's one of the president's biggest supporters was our Senator Bennett out here, who's one of the most ardent supporters of the pipeline. Voted for it, as a matter of fact. And, you know, it goes back to what you're saying. You know, if we had a Democratic Party that was worth its salt, there wouldn't have been but maybe one or two Democrats that would have voted for this bill when it came up in the first place. But no, our party has got to have the Democrats in name only faction, and it just all...
Yeah, because there are places where those are the only ones who can get elected, or there are places where that's where the money is.
out here in Colorado, at least that wasn't the way it used to be. And we, but the loss of Gardner proved the point between Republican and Republican light. The voters will always choose the real thing. And when Bennett's time comes up for re-election, the voters are going to do the same exact thing. And, you know, I just, there's not much I can say that hasn't been said. It just struck me today how much the Democrats as a party are not allowing the conversation to be a give and take. If somebody like Giuliani says something like that, there's no one there to defend the president. And I don't defend the president on everything, but for something like that, I've got nothing but contempt for the guy that said it. And yet, you know, you had, well, I think, one Republican who said he ought not to have said that, and that's been about it. You haven't heard much from the Democratic wing. And, you know, I often wonder, what does the president think of all this? When somebody like Giuliani says something like that, what's the president's response? What does he tell his people, his speechwriters, his press secretary, what does he tell them to say? Because, you know, the man had a grandfather who took care of him. He fought in World War II. You know, I mean, I wouldn't question anybody's patriotism when I know that he had family that fought and died in World War II. Why should he get to question my patriotism when I have family that have done the same thing? But yet that seems to be
IOKIYAR.
Mm-hmm. Exactly. And so, like I said, I think that's about all I can say without just going on. It was so poignant to me when that guy said that today that I wanted to call up and mention it, because it's, but for your show and a couple more like your show, that message is getting out. A true progressive message. And, I don't ever want to see that go away. It's hard for me, living on food stamps and whatnot, to donate very often. But, you know, to the ones that can, please do, because you're not only keeping Bob on the air, you're keeping the message on the air. And if your show went away, if Boy's show went away, and a couple more that are like it, what do we have? You know, I mean,
SpongeBob.
Yeah, I guess, but but then we get Dawson crying about SpongeBob being actually a agenda for the gays. You know, so don't want to hear Mr. Dawson complaining about that. So we got to keep the progressive message on the air, I guess.
Right. Exactly.
So anyway, I'll let you go and. Thank you very much, Warren family.
Thank you, Kevin. Have a good evening.
Take care.
Bye now. Our buddy Kevin calling from Colorado Springs. That, in turn, opens up the Gizmo line, 304-663-4676. 304-663-4676. 304-663-HORN. Yeah. And I'm going right back over to the Skype line in a moment. Note coming in from Ron and Raleigh. The right to make money is the subject line. I heard John, an interesting caller, say that the United States has the right to make currency. The truth is the United States has the right to coin money. That's the reason that the Federal Reserve prints paper money. That's the reason there was all that talk about an $18 trillion coin the fact that a quasi-governmental organization controls our currency is downright strange. And every time we go into monetary policy, my eyes begin to swim and roll back in their heads, and I get lost because I'm a bear of very small mind. Over to the Skype line. Hey, welcome to the program.
Yeah, are you talking to me, sir?
I'm talking to you, Bill. What's up?
Hey, man, it was good to hear Kevin. Kevin and I speak at times together, and he's an enlightening soul and a really good guy. He was one of the best.
Yes, he is.
The Horn family. Somebody called me from Canada, and I can't remember his name.
Ron.
What?
Ron.
Okay, because he's from up around the capital up there of Canada. And he's going to be coming through here through summer, and maybe I'll get a chance to, because he goes right past this, well, everybody passes out Cleveland if they got a chance to go anywhere else, you know. That's one of those things. And the fellas that are putting the recording together, they got me a shortwave radio because I was, I had one years ago, and I love to hear BBC and any of the foreign language broadcasts are interesting to me because you want to hear what they're really saying, not what we're told what they're saying. Because news channels here, I do miss, the one I never watched in the morning, you know?
Yes.
Because Rachel Maddow makes me feel like a mental midget. You know? She has it, man, you know? She has the brain of the operation over there. Yeah, and the senator from Minnesota. Where's Wisconsin or Minnesota with that? The Saturday Night Live comedian who's
Franken?
He used to do a
Franken? Yeah, Minnesota.
He used to do a skit about having a psychic come on, and the psychic was always stuck in traffic jams, and he'd say, well, if you're a psychic, how come you can't see where to go, how to get here? Yeah, he'd lose the address and couldn't find the place. A real psychic. Yeah, that cynical humor is my cup of tea. But it's just, the president has disappointed me, and I'm sure everybody else, you know, this chronic, and this ISIS stuff is ridiculous. And I tell people that FDR and his number one, what was the guy's name that we, somebody's trying to call me now, in fact, but they got the call back. I don't get off the phone with you at all. I'm going to be on here. Because whoever's calling me, it isn't that important anyway. Probably trying to sell me something, you know.
Oh, it's probably the psychic. It's probably the Psychic Friends Network wanting to do a reading for you.
Well, do you feel that you're monitored at all, Bob, by people who shouldn't be monitoring? And have?
No, I absolutely don't. Because we've known since the earliest days of this network that we were being monitored. Peter Godbold found that out early on, and that's why periodically we say hi to Agent Fred. That's P-H-R-E-D-D with a double dose of his spying.
Has he been out with you, Peter?
Peter, not since our birthday night, no, which was October 24th.
Yeah, I just wonder, how cold is it down there?
Oh, nasty. No, it's not as bad as it has been. Right now it's 23. We're on our way down to a low of 18 tonight. But hey, come Friday we get a low of 3. Yeah, this is a winter that is apparently hell bent on going out nasty. Because even the first week, even the first week of March sucketh mightily.
Well, it's my daughter's birthday was in the first week in March, and my second wife's birthday, and that got expensive. I said, I'm trying to find my granddaughters, who were my daughter. My daughter was adopted by a nice guy. I mean, this guy was something, and she was taking Ambien. You know what that stuff is, Bob?
Yeah, I do.
So I ended up going to her funeral, and I met her adopted father, and this guy stood there and held my hand like we were lovers, and because he keeps saying, well, Bill, I knew, I saw the paperwork, and you wanted to get married, and the woman didn't, so, you know, it's not, you know. I said, yeah, but you did a terrific job raising. My first conversation with my daughter, I asked her if she read, and she laughed at me. She said, of course I do. Because that meant she picked up something from me along the line, you know.
Right.
I do miss that stuff, but talking books are a big help, and I get them whenever I can. I just picked up one now, which was Bernard Fall's book that I picked up in the library. It's called Street Without Joy, which was a name the French soldiers hung on one of the highways. They couldn't go anywhere without being ambushed. The only thing crazier, how much do you know about the war in Algeria?
Not as much as I should, but some.
Well, those guys, the French army well, first of all, the French citizens passed a law in 1950 that no draftees could be sent to Indochina. And the Algerians were part of the French colonial army that made a big name for themselves during the First and Second World War. And when they captured these Algerians at Dien Bien Phu, the Vietnamese went to work on them. How come you're over here fighting for these guys and they're controlling your country? And it kind of took, didn't it?
Well, it did,
and
absolutely.
If you could read any newspapers from that era, man, there were bombs flying all over the place in France, you know? And this, you and I have talked over and over again about the what happened in the Middle East after the First World War. And the boys went in there with their knives, the British and French, and they cut it up and down. You got this and I got that, that bullshit, you know?
Yep.
And this volunteer army was what we had between the wars. Our army was 17th in size in the world because the two oceans and the Navy would keep us safe from any invaders. Yeah, well, the rise of the airplane, you know. There's another book I'd love to get a hold of, Amelia Earhart Comes Home from Saipan, because the rumor is that flight around the world, a lot of it was, take a look and see, you know, on the Pacific.
Yeah, that it was.
Check out what the Japanese have.
Yeah,
what they're doing.
Yeah, that it was recon.
Yep. But anyhow, I won't keep you because I don't like to tie up the lines because unless I have something to say. But you were on the money tonight because these people are just, I don't know what world they're living in. And but, you know, I wish you wouldn't keep us all of us old guys to be considered part of that group. And that guy...
And I try to be careful about that, but it's but Fox's demographic
but you're
is some,
right. That's
it's, in, it's inescapable. I mean, that's why the ads are all for catheters and diabetes supplies and mobility chairs.
Yeah.
And then if anybody's got any money at all left over after they bought their catheters and their diabetes supplies and their mobility chairs, then they can spend it on buy gold now. There's never been a better time to buy gold. Gold's your best hedge against inflation. Buy gold now. That Kenyan Muslim usurper is gonna crash the economy. You're gonna want some gold. Yeah, that.
Well, I was just this thing was silver many years ago, and
the Hunt brothers.
Yeah, because my dad's brother, I know he had a silver bars in his house. But my father's brother, my father's brother, yeah, he was a man with a golden hand when it came to fixing any kind of devices, and he worked for the fellas, you know, he worked for the, I don't know how much, did you go up or down Mayfield Road when you were in town with your dad at the hospital?
Not so much. I was largely I largely confined my adventures to Euclid Avenue.
Yeah, well, Euclid and Mayfield, and you keep going down Euclid to 116th Street, you'll find the Euclid Tavern and another place that I played that was the Brick Cottage. It's gone, of course. The Euclid is opened under a different company. I'm supposed to go down there. Because another guy who's connected, who listens to you a lot, he's a computer guy too, but I just say, you know who I'm talking about, who I have. I don't know how, if something's wrong with me, or did I say something wrong, or what's going on? I can't reach him by, I have two phone numbers, and can't, I don't know if he blocked me or what, but.
Oh, I don't think so. I don't think so.
Well, you want to drop him a line and say, hey.
Well, I think you just did.
Oh, he did? I can't use the.
No, I think you just did by saying this. He listens.
Yeah. Well, if he calls me, and I'll cover the charges on the phone.
Don't worry. Yeah, stop. Stop. No, let's.
Because I don't know how things. Oh, it worries me when a guy who's been really good to me, I haven't had a friend like that in years. You know, I mean, once I quit playing music, I lost a lot of friends. What made me their friend was I was the guy that was providing work. You know how that works. Because I was the guy that knew how to write a contract. And these guys that don't work with, they work without contracts with a bar owner. Here, put this rope around your neck and jump off the chair. You know, it's that way. I had a guy who was a Sikh, of all things. He owned a big strip club downtown and he on that west side, and he owned this little place close to where the Indians played baseball. And he booked me and kept canceling me. And he sent me a check one time. There was only one problem with it, Bob. It was a hot check.
Yeah.
There's no money in the bank. So he didn't know that my second wife, who would run the battered women's shelter in Lake County. We had a connection with the sheriff up there. The sheriff called him and said, hey, you know what you did was a third-degree felony. Whoops. So the guy sent me a good check, and I never showed up to play. Nice guy I am, huh? Yeah, so I wish my friend would call me. Somebody was calling me while I was on hold with you. If he calls me, I'll pay for the call or whatever I have to do, because I miss him. He's a
those days are gone. The days of toll charges and person to person and station to station and that's all.
I'm not getting through on his.
So you've lit the bat signal. Now let's just see what's going on.
And I can't find him. See, the new computer, the old computer, the email was not working, and the new one I have a real problem with because it's brand new to me, and I need to get all these good radio stations that I listen to. You know, that is that one, this Horn Network, you got to be able to reach that kind of stuff.
Yeah, exactly. Well, Bill, you have yourself a good evening.
You guys keep my wheels turning, and that's important when you get old.
Well, absolutely.
Here's the rut. Go lay down in it, you know, and just stay in it. Anyway, you stay out of trouble.
All right, we'll try. Take care, Bill. We'll talk soon. Bye now. Our buddy Bill, Mr. Stress, calling from Cleveland. Let's see. The fundraising update. We're still $90 away from the evening's goal. 9 people at $10, 10 people at $9, 4.5 people at, no, 20 people at, no. See what happens when I do the ciphering on the fly? Never mind. But, yeah, the Contribute tab has the interface for PayPal, and all help is good help. Again, and Ron had asked me about this earlier, so I wanted to make sure that I did mention this. A programming note for next week. Next week I will be going to Washington, D.C. for the Families USA Radio Row, broadcasting live from the Methodist building on Capitol Hill, corner of First and Constitution. Not quite. No, it's the corner of First and Maryland, really. And we'll be broadcasting for 2 days, the 3rd and the 4th, from the Methodist building right across the street from the Supreme Court of the United States, because they're having arguments regarding whether or not it's constitutional for the federal exchanges to provide subsidies to people in states that don't have a state exchange. Yeah, really. Because the Republican Party still thinks it's a really good idea to take health care away from people who have health care. You know, this whole wasting of money on Supreme Court challenges might be forestalled if we could get some of those people who have health care now who didn't before to pick up the pitchforks and the torches and go march on, I don't know, the Competitive Enterprise Institute or the American Enterprise Institute. Or, and it's just right around the corner, really, on Massachusetts Avenue, how about the Heritage Foundation? Okay? But, no, that's not going to happen. Anyway, we're going to be broadcasting live there. That means on the road 2 days, and that's Tuesday and... It's either going to be Tuesday and Friday or Monday and Friday, because there's a possibility I might be able to go up there and do a little bit of ache work, too. But we know there's going to be 2 days of broadcasting. I'll be live from noon to 3 Eastern time on the 3rd and the 4th of March. And we'll be reruns on either Monday and Tuesday or Tuesday and Friday or Monday, Tuesday and Friday, depending on how it works out. It would be nice to be able to go up on Monday and just sort of relax into the thing instead of having, you know, sweat condition alpha, which is how we usually work these things. But we'll be having lots of interesting interviews. Hope you'll tune in. We'll rerun the program at 6 p.m. Eastern time as typical. But that means that next week is going to be a fundraising nightmare for the beginning of March. So if there was any way to get out in front of that a little bit, it would be great. Because unless I'm on the air on Monday, well, we know, let's see, so that's... that's two shows. Well, might as well count the ones that, so $600 in fundraising, possibly the whole week, $750, that we're going to have to catch up with, keep up with, however we care to describe it. So just hopefully everybody knows what the schedule is, and come Monday I won't get emails saying, Bob, where the hell are you? Right? Prediction coming in from Benedict. SCOTUS won't throw out the subsidies. They take their orders from the insurers and are not about to cut off that massive cash flow from the government to the insurers. Yeah, no, they're not going to cut off the subsidies entirely, but the question is whether or not whether federal monies can be used to subsidize people purchasing from the federal exchanges in states that don't have their own exchange. So, for instance, Kentucky, you're fine. California, you're fine. Oregon, you're fine. Washington, you're fine. New York, et cetera, et cetera, et cetera. Sane states, you're fine. But if you're in one of those booger-eaten states where some governor said, well, no, we're not going to have none of that Kenyan Muslim socialism, usurpation, health care, going to, no, 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 can't do that. The flag is falling. God bless America. If you're in one of those states, and West Virginia is one of those states because we took millions and millions of dollars from the federal government to set up a state exchange, and then GERT turned around and said, well, we spent all our money studying on whether or not we could have a state exchange, and we've decided we're too damn stupid to be able to figure out how to run one, so we'll just use the federal exchange if y'all don't mind. And then Competitive Enterprise Institute, or the American Enterprise Institute, or the Liberty Legal Fund, or whoever it is that does this stupid shit, dragged a $20 bill through a trailer court and found themselves a plaintiff who said, well, I'd go out of business if I had to have the health care. And so, no, they're not going to cut off the subsidies altogether, Benedict, but they may damned well cut off the subsidies to the states that participate in the federal exchange instead of having their own state exchange, because freedom. It's sort of like a backdoor nullification, if you will. Get it? Yeah. So just to, you know, just for the sake of clarification. Let's see. We got 30 minutes left in the program. Both phone lines are open if you wish to carry on a conversation. And you are welcome to bring whatever you wish to the table on this here Titanic Tuesday, 304-663-4676 is the Gizmo line. 304-574-8178 is the Skype line. And remember, that doesn't mean you have to use Skype. It's just what we call these things. Okie dokie? Okie dokie. So we got all that taken care of. Skype to Skype is, of course, Bob Kincaid Horn. That's the contact. If you've never done it before, just send me a contact request, and away we go. Other stories. A little presidential politics. It is hard. It is painful. It is sad to watch one's parents grow older. Quite often there is a all too often, all too often, there is a diminution of mental faculties. As people grow older, sometimes they lose their inhibitions, and they say things that we would rather they didn't say. And, that must be what is happening right now with poor Rand Paul and that thing on his head. Because Pappy Ron is just, he's gotten on the train and he's chugging right around the bend. Chugga, 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 chugga. Gold standard. Chuka, 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 chuka. And all those years when Ron Paul denied writing those sleazy, filthy, bigoted, prejudiced, racist newsletters where they referred to people of color as animals. And, I didn't write those. I had no idea. I was just raking in the money that came in from a newsletter. I didn't know I was in there. Well, cranky old Ron. I don't know. I can only imagine the phone call between Rand and Ron lately. Dad!
Yeah, son?
Dad, ixnay on the axe blay.
I'm trying to be president here. You're killing me, Dad. Well, I don't know what you're talking about. I've just been going to secessionist meetings is all and talking about the truth.
Dad. We gotta make people think that we're not really racist. Jesus, how hard is this, Dad? Upshay. Upay. Come on, help me here.
What am I talking about? I'm talking about this. Take it away, Uncle Ron.
These sanctions just always impress me, among other problems, as just being sadistic. In fact, I can't think of any example in history where a country actually gave in to sanctions and said, okay, we're going to stop doing, whatever the hegemon doesn't want us to do. In general, they just hunker down and they don't change their ways, either for good or bad.
In fact, I think it does the opposite. So if you have dissenters in Iran, and then you put on sanctions, people by their very nature unify. If we're attacked by foreigners and have a 9/11, Republicans and Democrats come together because we see it as a foreign source. So this undermines the dissidents in these countries. But the two areas, as a matter of fact, the neocons claim the sanctions have done this wonderful good because...
Wait a minute. He's almost making sense, isn't he? I mean, kind of, in a sort of speaking the language of the... of our galactic overlords from Norblap 12 kind of way, but a little bit, kind of, maybe.
That is what.
Don't spit out the hockey puck. You know better.
Brought them to the table. Yet at the same time, many neocons say we don't even want to talk to them. But I don't believe that they do achieve anything. I mean, if ISIS can get the oil out of the ground, package it up, and sell it, and get millions of dollars to run their so-called quasi...
Hey, Sonny, run down to the store and get me a package of oil. A tube or something, however it is, the package, they package it, don't they? Huh? What?
government and fight these wars. I mean, how the sanctions don't seem to be, a tremendous success. Also, they have always used South Africa as an example where sanctions made the difference. But I think there are some geopolitical and social changes that occurred there that made that come about. But they won't give up. They have to feel good about it. I was always...
Here it is. Strap in. Get ready. It's coming.
I was always annoyed with it in Congress because we had an anti-war unofficial group, the few libertarian Republicans, and then generally the Black Caucus and others did not. They're really against war because they want all that money to go to food stamps for people here.
Everybody drink. Yes, Devin, the old man wants a tube of lube.
Hey, I like the 10W-40 myself.
Now, you've got that, right? The Black Caucus are against war because they want all of that money to go to food stamps. Let's say that again. The Black Caucus and others are really against war because they want all of that money to go to food stamps. By God, if we were spending the Pentagon budget on food stamps, you really would have to have, as Glenn Grothman of Wisconsin, has said he wants, you'd have to have people monitoring the damn grocery carts. No, he really said this, to see what the people with the free food were eating. Yes, Devin, that strange flavorless Kentucky jelly. Yes. No, this is not a joke. Glenn Grothman, speaking at a town hall in his district in Wisconsin last week, said that he wanted the people who had voted for him to monitor other people's grocery carts. Jesus Christ, they didn't even do that in East Germany. But yes, he wants people to snoop into other people's grocery carts at the stores to make sure that nobody on food stamps is eating good food. Grothman, and this is a quote, told the people in attendance to keep an eye on the types of things people in food share buy at the grocery store. Glenn Grothman has apparently been talking to Louis Asparagus Gohmert, who is convinced that everybody out there on food stamps, getting their dollar a day, is spending it all on Alaskan king crab legs. Republicans. Tea baggers. What would you do? What would you do? Food stamps or otherwise, SNAP, as it's called now. What would you do if somebody was a peeping into your grocery cart? I mean, isn't that a little creepy? Does Glenn Grothman... Oh, that's right, Gerald. Gerald notes, don't forget the lobster, Bob! Oh, not the lobster, anything but the lobster. They sell those in grocery stores, even in West Virginia. Damn! Earther noting, hey, Bob, I've always believed the 8 scariest words in the English language are, I'm a libertarian and I'm here to help. Well, they don't say that. They say, I'm a libertarian and you're on your own. I've got mine, F you. That's more than 8 words, though, isn't it? Point taken, though. Did these ignorant teabaggers not understand that this is America, where we take a goddamn gun to the grocery store? You start snooping into somebody's basket, you just may get one in the head. Step away from my basket and put down my Alaskan king crab legs. Now what you got to ask yourself is, did he he buy 2 pounds of crab legs, or did he buy 3? Well, what do you think, punk? Painful. Hey, an offer has been put on the table via News Ninja Carol Baker. She says, in light of what's going to be going on with fundraising for the next week or so, she says, I'll make a deal with all the Hornedonistas. Anyone who contributes to have a show on me for the next week to cover the shortfall, I'll send them a Hooterville Holler gift basket filled with meats, cheeses, and jams, and throw in a gallon of homemade root beer. Yum, yum. Well, if I had $150 laying around, I'd contribute it for the root beer, because I know what goes into the Hooterville Holler gift baskets, and man, they're tasty. So that's the deal. All have a show on me's get a Hooterville Holler gift basket and a gallon of root beer. That is mighty generous, Carol. Thank you very kindly. Gerald with a note. That's going to be especially fun in West Virginia, the grocery basket monitoring, because everybody's going to be able to pack their freedom protectors, their Second Amendment remedies, concealed. Yeah, I noticed that. That was a note I got from Robert in Morgantown a minute ago. This bill, I don't know, I guess it's making progress. They're going to lower the you-can-buy-a-gun age to 18, because, you know, that's old enough to join the military. You can buy a gun and take your own gun with you to the military. No, you can't. But no, because freedom. That's economic growth in West Virginia, letting 18-year-olds buy guns. Woo-wee! Wolverines! Got to add a little hillbilly to it there. Let's run over to the gizmo line. I think we've got Jim in Louisiana, Stan. Hey, Jim.
Good, Bob. How's my phone?
So far, so good, I think.
Okay, because I know a week or so ago, I had
problems. No, it's dodgy. It's dodgy. It's falling apart.
I'll talk real quick. I'm still going to send you that 50. I'll probably send you another 50. But the food stamp thing, why are they worried about it? I mean, it just puts more money into the company in the long run, and it gives people bread and circuses, you know.
I'm at a loss. Carol Baker pointed out a minute ago. When did poverty envy become a thing in this country? But that's where the wealth class is now. And of course, there are no poverty members of Congress. Glenn Grothman is not going broke. He's not turning his pockets inside out. And neither is Louis Asparagus Gohmert. They begrudge basic existence to people of limited means in this country. And that's just another one of those signposts, Jim, that says we're circling the drain.
Yeah, but see, they also forget the ego trip, because if they're at the bottom, they have nobody to look down upon. But this way they have somebody to look down upon. You see what I'm saying?
Yeah, but they're not looking down far enough because they're not quite starving and laying on the floor yet. Remember back when cranky Uncle Ron was running for president back in what, 2012 was it? And he said and all the Republicans in that auditorium cheered like crazy. I mean, they cheered louder than they do for the national anthem when he suggested that people ought to be left to die on the floors of American hospitals.
That was embarrassing.
Well, it's all embarrassing, Jim. Daggum, you know.
I mean, to be a member of the so-called society, and that's the way a substantial portion of it thinks. It's just I've got members of it in my family, believe it or not. I've told you that. In fact, they're the majority. It's they're just all. They've got theirs. Everything's good. Yeah. It's just like, I mean, it's just, what's the deal on the disability cutback? What's up on that? Is that still going to go for a vote, or?
I'm not sure where that is right now. I haven't followed that in a while. I apologize for not knowing.
No, I haven't heard, but I heard it. I heard it talking about 20% cut. And, I just got on it a couple of months ago. Yeah, you're not living large. I don't know why people get that delusional thinking.
No, it's not. But remember, it doesn't matter what the facts are, because we're talking about Republicans here, and they just, whatever happens in their imagination is in fact reality. So if Louis Gohmert has an imaginary constituent who says that he was standing in the HEB and somebody in front of him had a whole basket full of Alaskan king crab legs, well then it's real, because that's how Louis Gohmert imagined it. And of course, being a Christian, well, he'd never, you know, lie, would he? No.
Well, his whole religion's a lie, so I think that's my opinion.
But
I used to work at a grocery store years ago, and I remember when it was, I think now they give them debit cards or something like that. There's no way you can tell what it is. I mean,
The food stamps are a dollar a damn day, Jim. Under many instances. And for instance, if you get a cost of living increase, let's say you're on SSI, and you get a cost of living increase on that, your food stamps are reduced concomitantly. You get $30 more on your SSI, they cut your food stamps by $30.
Ain't that America, man?
Land of the free, baby.
Wants me to play and go with John Cougar Mellencamp, huh?
Yeah.
And, I can't be hopeful about the situation this country's in or been in. For me, going back to ever since I was born almost, I know definitely 63, you know, that day was a big turning point. But, it just seems to be constantly steering. It's like when Malloy was reading 1984. It's, you know, they're getting people ready for less lower and lower expectations. And each generation dies off. They don't remember, you know, how good and how helpful and they've been down in Social Security. I know I'm jumping around, but they've been down in Social Security for 20, 30 years. I can remember hearing that 20 years ago, 25 years ago, about how they wanted to, we're going broke, we're going broke. They've been singing that song, and all you got to do is just raise. I got the solution. Take the limits off. If you make $1 million, $5 million a year, not the first $100,000, $115,000, whatever it is, you pay Social Security tax on every bit. And not only that, if you're making money dealing in the stock market, you pay Social Security
see,
tax.
Here's Dr. Bill had an idea a long time ago that I think time has come. I just love the idea. I think there should be a federal personal property tax on every share of stock.
Yeah, that sounds like a great idea. But that'll never fly. I mean, even if you could predict the best arguments, but the Koch brothers and people like them and their money will just...
Man, imagine the tax revenue. On. Imagine the tax revenue if we just imposed a penny a share. Just think about how much taxes the Koch brothers would actually pay. And wouldn't that be kind of gratifying?
It would.
Think about the roads we could pave, the schools we could build, the hospitals we could upgrade, the health care we could provide. And, you know, anything that sends the Koch brothers screaming to their miserable goddamn graves makes me a happy man.
You and me both, brother. That's another thing that drives me up the wall. It's just like the falling apart of our infrastructure, the commons. And I guess they're waiting for everybody to get the Rand Paul, Ayn Rand, pull yourself. yourself up by your bootstraps and have toe rolls.
Well, you know, I mean, but you know, Ron. No, I mean, Ron Paul. It's clear. I mean, he understands the situation. The Congressional Black Caucus just wants to take all our missiles and our bombs and our jets and our helicopters and our tanks and our Ospreys and take them down to the payday lending place and sell them for cheap and take the title and just sign the title over and take all that money and put it in food stamps and just have a big old picnic. Assholes, you know, I mean, really. Poor Tim from L.A., I got an email from him a minute ago. He said, Bob, I just bit into the effing hockey puck. Can you give me one with one made of titanium? God almighty. That's just astonishing.
Yeah. And one of your earlier callers was saying about there is no other outsource except for you, Malloy. You know, you got Serious Left or that's Progressive. And there's some pretty good people on there. Then you've got, your channel, and you've got, what's the thing on the internet? There's another one, but it's not a lot. I mean, I remember on Sirius, there's like four or five right-wing stations, basically, and only that one progressive channel. And it's like three or four hardcore right-wing.
Sirius can't keep up with the number of right-wing channels. And it's all, and it makes me think, Jim, that it's all pay to play. You know what I mean?
Everything is. Yeah. Yeah. It's, things have not changed. They just seem to keep getting worse. As Mike Python says, always look on the bright side of life as you're hanging on the cross.
Life's a joke. Life's a laugh, and death's a joke. It's true. Jim, you have yourself a good evening.
All right,
we'll talk soon.
I'll get that in tomorrow.
All right, thanks. Bye now. Our buddy Jim calling from the wilds of Louisiana, Stan. And good news. Thank you very much to Frank, and thank you to Sal. We're down to $60 to go in this evening's fundraising, and that is a big deal indeed. Just $60 to go, and have a show on me, News Ninja Carol Baker, offering a Hooterville Holler gift basket and a jug of root beer. That's yummy. Just yummy. And the PayPal interface, of course, is at headonradionetwork.com under the tab Contribute. And a reminder, all that really obnoxious stuff about who you work for and what your shoe size is, you don't have to fill that out. You just want to be able to get enough data in there to click the button that'll send you to the next screen, and then you go and deal with all the other stuff. Okay? Thank you. Well, it is time to get out of here. About 7 minutes left in the program. If anybody wants to jump in with a last quickie observation. Dadgummit, Brad Friedman, how did that sneak in here without me seeing it? We had the Green News Report this evening. And I didn't run it, and I'm ashamed of myself, because it's the 6th anniversary edition of the Green News Report. Congratulations to Brad and Desi for a consistently wonderful product. Wonderful indeed. Well, why not? Let's go out with a giggle. I don't know. I should probably save that for prayer meeting Wednesday. No, we're just going to do it now. All right, we'll do it live. Everything sucks. You remember the preacher the other day who was warning everyone against, everlasting bunnies? Yeah. Well, it's a little clearer when it's coming from former liquor supply officer Marion Robertson. I wish you sinful daughters of Eve would just lay the hell off. I mean, really.
Desexualization of culture has fueled the world human trafficking problem. That message was delivered at the fourth annual symposium at Regent University's Center for Global Justice this weekend. Speaker and Exodus Cry founder Benjamin Nolo told students that cultural attitudes towards women must change in order to end human trafficking. What's not helping with that challenge is mainstream promotion of movies like 50 Shades of Grey. Nolo told CBN News that he is concerned that the film about sexual brutality has won such broad support.
Now the culture seems to be moving in a direction of not just endorsing or promoting the consumption of women on the part of men, but the violent perpetration against women. It's kind of shocking in that sense to think that we have reached this point where, I mean, it seems like there is no conscience at all left whatsoever.
And Nolo is currently producing a documentary that examines how our culture has become hypersexualized. Pat?
The amazing thing about that 50 Shades of Grey is that apparently how many women have read the book and how many women are going to the movie. It's about all kinds of sadomasochism. It's about bondage, about whips. It's about boiling oil. It's about various...
How does he know? Just asking.
Types of restraints. It is an unbelievable story of sadomasochistic bondage of women. Women are objects. And to think that everybody is not taking it as, oh, well, that's just a quote, romance story, please.
Please. What? Marion, please please me? Oh, yeah? Like I please you? Just had to share, because daggum you women out there with your high-tech devices fantasizing about boiling oil. I think he's confusing women with the dictator of, like, Uzbekistan or something, isn't he? He's the guy with the boiling oil. Oh, well. And thanks, Will, for chipping in. We are now down to $40 for our fundraising goal for the evening. Thank you, Will, from Chicago. Thank you very kindly indeed. Time to get out of here. Thank you to everyone who makes all of this go. Thank you to our all-volunteer staff, Lottie and Sparky and Texas Betsy in the Horn chat room moderators. Thank you to our news ninjas, Gene and Susan and Carol Baker. Thank you to John Fox in Australia. Thank you to Ben Birch, WhiteRoseSociety.org. Thanks to the hardest working, bravest people I know, the men and women of Coal River Mountain Watch, CRMW.net, and ACHECT, ACHECT.org. And always, 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 Gina, it's all for you.